Judge Mannion will be participating this morning telephonically, and so Judge Mannion, you're with us?
Can you hear me okay?
I can. Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
All right.
I would rather be there sitting here with a complaint, but I appreciate
you coming. Yes, well, we wish you a speedy recovery. Judge Mannion is one of our more athletic and athletically endowed judges, and he was preparing himself for the 2004 Olympics in cross-country skiing and had a detour on the way to that event. So he is with a collarbone in need of repair, but he's as sharp as ever, and we will be hearing from him on the phone.
He didn't hit his head.
The first case for argument this morning is Hernandez versus Catholic Bishop. Mr. Crooks.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. I bring before you today a Title VII case. A Title VII case that was dismissed on a Rule 12b-1 motion prior to discovery by Judge Kaur, the argument being a jurisdictional argument. We're asking that this court reverse the decision of Judge Kaur and remand this case for further proceedings. First, I'm going to address the waiver issue. Defense has argued that we waived our issues that we're arguing before this court, and I think you have to look at the sequence of events to see how that goes. This was a pro se complaint that was filed using the form that's made available by the district court. On March 27th, the defendant appeared before Judge Kaur, presented a motion to dismiss. The pro se plaintiff appeared as well, and I was there as well. Although I was not of record, I had been consulted the day before, and as a courtesy to the plaintiff and the court, I intended to indicate that I was likely to come into the case in the future. If you look at the record, as I'm sure you have, you'll see that the judge expressed some skepticism about the motion to dismiss and directed the defendant in the case to file a supplemental pleading specifically addressing the jurisdictional issue. The court ordered that supplemental filing be filed by April 10th and set what the court termed a status for April 16th. Now, I know that the minute order, which eventually came out, or actually was issued that day, referred to the 16th as hearing on the motion. But that minute order, of course, went to a pro se plaintiff who I don't think the court can seriously expect to understand that the nature of the proceedings on the 16th had perhaps changed. Also, the fact that the status was set 6 days after the supplemental filing indicates the court was not looking for a responsive pleading at that time. I think the court's only conclusion from this is the conclusion I drew, which was that the court wanted to be sure that the motion to dismiss had some merit before asking for a response. On the 16th, as you know, the court issued a written opinion granting the motion to dismiss. I think given that factual sequence with a pro se plaintiff, it just would be completely unfair to rule that the arguments have been waived.
Mr. Crooks, let me take you somewhere else.
Sure.
Of the time. What is Ms. Alicia Hernandez's best evidence disputing the church's characterization of her job duties? In other words, does she concede that her job duties were as the defendant describes them?
Your Honor, her job duties cut a wide path. Some of them were religious in nature. There's no question that sometimes her duties touched upon the delivery of the church message. Her duties were also clerical in part. Some of her time was spent merely translating things into Spanish. Some of her efforts were merely scheduling, clearly clerical in duty, scheduling appearances of various clergymen, scheduling appearances that were of no religious import.
Let me explain what my problem is. It seems to me that although she challenges the characterization of her claim, she does not challenge the defendant's characterization of her position. she disagrees with it, but I don't see factual support for the disagreement. Am I making sense to you?
You're making complete sense. I understand what you're saying. And my response is the situation we were in. She never responded to the motion to dismiss. The best we could do is quickly put in a motion for reconsideration. There was never discovery in this case. This is not a case, as they often come before the court, on summary judgment on this issue. We don't have a full record. In fact, that's one of the main arguments that we have here, is that it was simply premature to dismiss it
on
a 12B1.
Forgive me, but what is the factual basis to dispute the type of job that she held? In other words, you just told us that some of her duties were religious in nature. 10%, 20%, 50%, 90%. Does it matter if it's any percent?
Well, first of all, I don't think a percentage is necessarily going to be the ultimate question here. My view is it was something less than 50%, but having not had a full record, having not taken depositions in this case, you know, frankly, I'm not in a position to say with great specificity what it is. And I think Your Honor also should be looking at something else rather than just her job duties, because that's what the cases look at. They look at not only what's the position and what are the duties, they look at what was the nature of the discrimination and what was the nature of the defense being offered by the defendant. If the defendant were to say, for example, we fired this communications director because of ongoing disputes about church policy, then I think they have a defense. But my client was not terminated. This case is a constructive discharge, and not only would it be ludicrous for the defendant to say, we treated her unequally, we put her in a corner of a storage room as an office, we gave her broken furniture because we disagreed with her on the message of the church. Clearly, they're not going to say that, and they haven't said that. They're bringing forth the usual kind of Title VII defenses, explaining their conduct in a neutral way, trying to, you know, we didn't have enough offices, that's why she was placed there, etc. So they're not saying we fired this person because of a disagreement over religious matters. And I think if you look at what they have provided to the district court, where they produced emails and letters from my client discussing church policy and said, well, this is really her complaint. And in fact, that's what Judge Kaur said in his ruling, well, that this is really the nature of her complaint.
But Mr. Crooks, is it not the case that in addition to specific work conditions, she did express concerns, be the right word, or disagreement with the church's outreach to the Hispanic community? On a policy level. I'm not talking about how many people like herself are employed to get the message out. I mean to the substance of at least part of her responsibilities.
That's absolutely true, Your Honor.
Well, so is she in effect, at least for a period of time, sort of a press secretary for the church?
A part of her duties were akin to a press secretary?
Yeah, so if we would think just... let's try to get out of the legal box a little bit about what we view as the role of a press secretary. If there's a breakdown between the message giver and a press secretary, and on a level at least in part dealing with how you send the message out, I mean, I guess we think most frequently perhaps about a presidential secretary, press secretary. Do we even need to get to percentages if in fact that's the case? In other words, that they want a different voice or emphasis, and it doesn't come out. Wouldn't that be enough to cover the ministerial exception?
If that were the things you were complaining about and calling discrimination,
well, didn't
or
you do that in part?
Pardon me?
Isn't in part her complaint about how the message is delivered to the Hispanic community?
It's really not. It's really not. And I would recommend the court carefully look at her pro se complaint. Now, remember, this is a pro se...
I'm talking about the church's position on that. Their position is that she did complain about the delivery of the message. Is that correct?
Yes, but they haven't taken the next step and said, this is why we treated her in an unfair, unequal way, because we wanted her to quit. They've never taken the step and said that her ongoing dialogue about the church's message interfered with her ability to act in her capacity. They've never said that. They've always denied that they took the type of discriminatory actions that is the basis of her case. And I have to note, a pro se complaint, you read her complaint, none of the items that the defendant has put before the district court concerning this dialogue of church policy was contained in her pro se complaint. And this isn't a carefully crafted complaint by a lawyer who's read the law. This is a pro se plaintiff coming in and filling out a form.
Well, you know, the defendant at page 12 of the brief does state that the only allegation that was even remotely substantiated was plaintiff's criticism of her temporary office arrangements. And by this time, plaintiff's office situation had been resolved.
But that very phrase, remotely substantiated, this case was dismissed on a motion before any discovery. That would be a very good line if we were talking about a summary judgment ruling here, or if we were talking about an affirmative defense presented at trial, but that didn't happen. I think the Negrelli case, Judge Maravich's ruling in that case, which was on summary judgment, is really instructive here. Because in that case, the plaintiff was a parochial school principal. Clearly, her duties, to some extent, involved religious matters. Parochial schools teach religion. Clearly, some of her duties were secular. In that case, Judge Maravich, his primary focus was on what's the nature of the discrimination and what's the nature of the defense being presented by the defendant. And the defense and the nature of plaintiff's allegations had nothing to do with church policy. And in that case, summary judgment was denied. Frankly, I think that's the big picture in this case. I think the big picture is we're premature at this point. I don't think there is enough in the record for a decision to be made dismissing this case. I think it should be remanded. If counsel feels they have enough undisputed facts for summary judgment or at trial, then so be it. But right now it should be reversed.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Crooks. Ms. Anderson.
Morning. The Archdiocese filed a Rule 12b-1 motion to dismiss for lack of subject matter jurisdiction because that is a Rule 12b-1 motion is the only appropriate motion in this setting. It is completely improper to challenge jurisdiction by way of a motion for summary judgment. At the point at which the Archdiocese brought its Rule 12b-1 motion, it was incumbent upon the plaintiff to come forward with evidentiary facts that showed that the district court had subject matter jurisdiction. Now, as counsel explained, the plaintiff did not respond to the Archdiocese motion. After counsel filed an appearance, counsel then filed a motion to reconsider. But that motion to reconsider does not come forward with any evidentiary facts. Neither plaintiff's motion to reconsider nor plaintiff's briefs before this court come forward with even any examples of any acts of unequal treatment or any examples of some form of hostility or any facts giving rise to a hostile environment. To this day, the only factual grievance the plaintiff has presented is concerns her office accommodations.
Well, you know, the retaliation claim seems different to me. In other words, how is church doctrine involved in a claim that the church retaliated against the plaintiff after she complained of discrimination? That claim involves no differing religious opinions that I can see.
Well, all of the plaintiff's first complaint, internal complaint of discrimination, occurred July 1st. And in that email, the plaintiff attacked not anything involving her employment, but she accused the Archdiocese of neglecting the needs and issues of Hispanic Catholics. She accused the Archdiocese of mismanaging programs that purport to serve Hispanic Catholics. You know, and at the end of the day, when you really cut through all the parties' religious differences of opinion, they all come down to the fact that the plaintiff's idea of performing her job entailed doing things that the Archdiocese did not approve of. And under the First Amendment, it's the Archdiocese and the Archdiocese alone possesses a right to determine how it can best serve the needs of Hispanic Catholics. The Archdiocese's idea was to unite all the people of the church around one central core teaching. It did not wish to create separate teachings dividing people along ethnic, linguistic, or racial lines. And that, if you look at all of the plaintiff's emails, I'm sorry.
That's Judge Mannion asking a question, or about to ask a question, Ms. Anderson.
Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Yes, that is one of her claims.
Well, that's the complaint that she got from the office, right?
I'm sorry?
I'm sorry, I know this is awkward. She thinks she got an inferior office because of discrimination, because of her national origin. Is that where she's coming from, as far as her complaint?
That is her allegation, yes, Your Honor. Yes.
So this is a job for a Hispanic person.
Yes, I think that in terms of best communicating the church's religious message within the Hispanic community, it was felt that that position is most appropriately filled by a Hispanic Catholic.
When Judge Romer was referring to retaliation, is this a retaliation claim because they didn't accept her withdrawal?
Her office situation was resolved months before she left the Archdiocese.
I know that, but when I'm just trying to frame her complaint, if we're going to say there is subject matter jurisdiction as opposed to the exception, I just wonder if there is something saying about that she complained because of her national origin that she was given an inferior office.
No, I don't. Under the law of this circuit, complaints based solely upon one's office accommodations don't even qualify as the adverse action for the purposes of Title VII.
That's the next question, and that's, I guess, you answered that. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, and you know, and beyond that, in this case, it's absolutely undisputed that the office situation was completely resolved months before she left the Archdiocese. But in this case, I mean, there's no question that the plaintiff...
Are you saying that if in this circuit they had given her an office in a dog cage attached to a garage somewhere, she would have no cause of action? Is that what you're saying?
Given those extreme circumstances, there might be a different outcome, but the case law, as I know it, is that if the employee's sole complaint pertains to being given inferior office furniture or inferior computer equipment or communication devices, that standing alone is not sufficiently serious to constitute adverse action. But in this case, that whatever possible grievance she had about her office accommodations was resolved, I mean, months before she left the Archdiocese and before she filed four of the five discrimination charges and before the Archdiocese was aware she'd even filed the first. I mean, within a couple months of joining the Archdiocese, she was promised a new office. As a practical matter, given the shortage of office space and furniture, that required moving no less than, two other employees, borrowing office furniture from other people. And that it wasn't just the plaintiff. I mean, at the time the plaintiff obtained her office, two other people were moved, and the newly appointed chancellor of the Archdiocese was given the file cabinets that had been in the plan.
Would your argument change if she were merely a translator for the church?
Oh, I absolutely. There's no comparison between a translator and somebody such as the plaintiff, who is the manager of Hispanic communication. She was responsible for communicating the church's message. Indeed, that was her only purpose. Her whole purpose was to help the Archdiocese reach out to the Hispanic community. It was to promote the church. It was to promote the church's message. And all of the parties' disputes were based on differences of opinion as to how that should best be accomplished. I mean, and it's not just a matter of the Archdiocese trying to characterize the plaintiff's claims. The plaintiff wrote a 28-page, single-spaced report telling the Archdiocese exactly why she felt she was being discriminated against. And that report doesn't talk about anything employment-related. What it talks about is the Archdiocese's alleged neglect of Hispanic Catholics. It's allegedly improper allocation of resources. It's allegedly mismanaged religious programs.
See, here's what, where I have had a little bit of a problem with your view. You seem to be arguing that there are competing religious viewpoints here. But what church doctrine is involved in a claim that an employee was treated unfavorably because she is Hispanic? I would think that you would both be on the same side of that issue, even though you would disagree with her factual contentions.
Well, my problem is that she hasn't come forward with any factual contentions. Okay. On a 12B1 motion, it is absolutely her duty and her burden to come forward with facts, and she just hasn't done that. When we look at the only thing she's identified in any of her briefs or pleadings was office accommodations. Which A, were resolved, and B, wouldn't be actionable anyway. But if we actually look at all the emails, all the reports, all the memos she wrote, she says exactly why she feels she was discriminated against. And when you review those matters, each and every one of them goes to a matter or a difference of opinion with respect to the church's Hispanic ministry.
Well, she says here, not limited to office location, office furniture, exclusion from department management meetings and communications, exclusion from information about policies and issues, denial of resources for Hispanic communication needs, filed an internal complaint, was warned not to communicate with anyone else. I mean, there's a lot more than just... You keep saying it's just the office, but that's a lot more here, isn't it?
Well, I mean, as Your Honor just pointed out, she talks about failure to be given resources to perform her job as she thought she should perform it. The Archdiocese has no duty to fund or otherwise support viewpoints that it feels are inappropriate. And as far as, and again, she didn't come forward with any facts as to any of these issues, but the plaintiff viewed herself as almost the unilateral dictator of any issue that even remotely affected Hispanic Catholics. And so she felt that she had authority and power to decide issues, indeed to dictate church policy. And I think for that reason, occasionally maybe she did feel she'd been excluded from something, but it's the Archdiocese right to determine who speaks on its behalf, what its policies are, and how those policies should be communicated. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Anderson.
Thank you.
Mr. Crooks?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of quick points that I think have to be made. Judge Mannion specifically raised a question about she was Hispanic when she was hired, and obviously that sends off red flags in my mind because that's a very good defense to Title VII cases. And if we ever are to get to discovery and further proceedings in this case, it is the plaintiff's contention that her direct supervisor, who did not make the decision to hire someone for this position, who was hostile to her, he was the hostile person. He did not make the hiring decision. So we have a different person making the decision than creating the hostility. Counsel said that...
Was he the one responsible for her discharge?
Your Honor, he was responsible for the initial problems with the office and her treatment. It was a constructive discharge, and that was a combination of his activities plus retaliatory activities that started when she filed EEOC charges.
And the evidence of his alleged retaliation is the office facilities or physical
The best is the office, and not just the quality of the office. And we're talking about the corner of a storage room with filing cabinets, the fax machine, a broken desk, a chair that's not on wheels, no computer job.
What was before that? I mean, just for comparison purposes, I mean, that's what she was given. Did she have something better than that?
She came in as a new hire into that position.
Right.
And
she started there. I mean,
right.
Did the condition deteriorate, or is that the condition that existed and she was placed in it?
That condition was given to her, and it remained with her until a short time before she left. And I think an important point has to be made here.
Well, when you say a short time, the whole employment we're speaking of is, 9 months? Is that our total employment package here?
I think that's correct.
I think that's your allegation. And Ms. Anderson says that, I don't want to misquote her, I think she said months before there was some resolution. So how deep into this 9 month period are we talking about in that time frame that this initial poor location, if you will, continue? Is that half the time?
It was more than half the time. It was up until a few months before she left. And an important point here is they give the excuse, well, we were short of furniture, short of offices. But when she was told by someone higher up she could order furniture, she did so. Her supervisor canceled that order without telling her he'd canceled it. He gave as an excuse that she had ordered expensive furniture, but an investigation by the Archdiocese showed that, in fact, she had ordered very modest furniture, the type usually ordered. So how do they explain that other than discriminatory animus? What I've seen here today is, frankly, we're all trying to deal with the facts we have, and they're just too limited. I think it should be remanded so we can get all the facts.
Would you say a remand for discovery beyond her role as the communication director? What if discovery were limited to that, Mr. Crooks, and it established that a significant part of her responsibilities did have this component of message?
Clearly, we're asking for remand without any limitations, but we would certainly happily accept a remand that focused on discovery on this issue.
I guess the question I'm asking, if that were satisfied, could there be another element that would trump it? In other words, if the ministerial exception were established or not established, then, of course, that would trigger further step in discovery if that were appropriate. But would that, just as a general question, would any satisfaction at that level, that is in tilting toward the Archdiocese position, end the inquiry?
It could. I think the problem is this. As we all know, lawyers can always find something to argue about. I think we'd be down there arguing about whether this deposition or this document request related to that narrow issue. In Negrelli, he looks at the nature of the defense, and I think we do have to look at that as well.
Thank you, Ms. Crooks.
Thank you,
Ms. Anderson. The case is taken under advisement. The